Chapter 3. Remember the Ladies. On March 31st, 1776, Abigail Adams wrote a letter to her husband that later generations would quote again and again. In it, she urged him and his fellow lawmakers, as they moved toward new forms of government, to remember the ladies. The phrase survives because it is sharp, memorable, and early. But if it is read carelessly, it can be mistaken for a witty aside instead of what it really was, a pointed political challenge. Abigail was telling John Adams that men who had spent years protesting arbitrary power should consider how readily they exercised arbitrary power at home. She knew the gap between revolutionary language and lived reality. The letter asked for more generosity and justice in the laws of the new nation. Abigail warned against placing such unlimited authority in the hands of husbands and noted that men would be tyrants if they could. The tone carried intelligence and irony, but the argument itself was serious. She was not claiming that women already possessed equal status and merely needed polite acknowledgement. She was pointing to a structural imbalance in law and custom. John answered with humor and evasion. He praised her spirit, joked about the challenge, and moved on. His response is historically important because it shows both affection and limitation. He respected Abigail deeply as a partner and correspondent. He did not, however, imagine the revolution as a movement ready to reorder gendered power in any sweeping way. This exchange is often treated as evidence that Abigail was ahead of her time. That is true, but it needs precision. She was not a 19th century feminist living in the wrong century. She did not propose modern equality in all forms. She still operated within many assumptions of her world. Yet within that world, she saw more clearly than many contemporaries that principles do not defend themselves. People narrow them. Power narrows them especially. Her letters repeatedly return to that insight. Abigail also wrote about slavery and human bondage with moral seriousness, though, like many people in her era, she did not always sustain that critique to its farthest possible conclusions. Still, she could see the contradiction of a revolutionary movement speaking about liberty while leaving slavery in place. In this, as in her comments about women, she proved herself to be one of the founding generation's least comfortable observers. She did not let national flattery come too easily. What makes her especially compelling is that she did this while carrying practical burdens that many male political thinkers escaped. Abigail was not speaking from leisure alone. She managed property, children, workers, and health in a wartime world. Her thought grew out of pressure rather than separation from it. This gave her political writing a grounded quality. She knew that law enters households. She knew that ideals become real or false through daily treatment of dependents, spouses, laborers, and neighbors. She knew that a republic praising liberty while tolerating private domination would remain morally unfinished. Her challenge to John was therefore larger than the line most leaders remember. She was asking what kind of revolution America intended to become. Was it merely a transfer of governing authority from one set of men to another? Or would it really reconsider how power should be held? The answer in her own lifetime was partial at best. Women did not receive political equality. Married women's legal status remained constrained in many ways. Public office and voting were still overwhelmingly male domains. Abigail did not win the argument in any immediate legislative sense. But history is not measured only by instant victory. Sometimes it is measured by clarity. Abigail Adams saw clearly that a nation can speak boldly about rights while drawing the circle of those rights too tightly. She said so only, plainly, and from within the very household of one of the Republic's leading founders. That gave her words unusual force then and lasting force now. The revolution kept moving. Armies marched, Congress debated, diplomats.
two letters, Abigail kept pressing the same deeper question. What is liberty worth if it belongs only to the people already closest to power?